I knew it was going to take longer, though.
I'm just amazed at Florida. I think all the states should look to Florida.
I know. Look at Florida, though.
They managed to bang out for their population, for the amount of counties that were there.
Yeah, you see Miami County, Miami-Dade County flipped, and Hillsborough County flipped?
I'm not talking about the flip, I'm talking about the report. When I was a kid, you could go to bed after election night at 11 o'clock and you know who the next president was. There was none of, we're going to continue on for another week afterwards. Florida, after what happened in 2000, Democrats, Republicans worked together, they fixed their problems, and now they got a system that they knew who was going to win by like 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Not earlier.
Look how fast. That's how Florida's not a battleground state anymore.
I'm not talking partisanship. I'm just talking about the process.
Oh, I see.
I don't care who wins or loses. I don't think, like, Arizona, they still haven't decided yet, and they've only got like 66% of the votes counted. That's ridiculous in this day and age.
I know. Like, some of these.
So. That's what I think the state should look to. I mean, if we're going to let voting go for a month before, you have those tallies done, which means there's no reason for you to continue like what happened, or we're still going. It's Arizona.
There's still one other state, too.
I think Nevada, though, too.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I know.
But I do have stats. I did spend the morning tabulating statistics and information about what took place in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Just gonna give everyone their checks.
I was actually pretty surprised about Florida, though. I don't know if I was really that surprised, though. But I did know it was gonna happen, though, Professor, about Florida.
There was really no surprises.
Yeah, I mean,
no maps again. All right. So,
here's the little bit of information I got to share with you about Tuesday. So, on Tuesday, across the country, 44 states and 5 of the territories held legislative elections. So, what does this mean? Well, 6 have their state legislatory elections on the odd year. 44 do it on the even year, including the 5 territories. There were elections that impacted 85 of the 99 legislative chambers in our country. Currently, prior to the election results, and I haven't got them updated, the GOP holds 56 and the Democrats hold 42. Where are the other 2 chambers of the 99? Well, I discovered something that I didn't realize, and I'm going to add it to my notes. Alaska has a messed up legislature. It's bicameral. And people get elected by parties, but they operate more like a British parliamentary system, in that the political parties have caucuses. So they don't divide themselves on partisanship. They divide themselves based on policies. So the weird thing is that their focus is not on the Dems versus the Rs, but it's based on regional concerns, because Alaska is so huge. So the what are called Bush Democrats, it has nothing to do with President Bush, but it's Bush as in there are huge parts of Alaska that are not connected to any highway system. You know, to get to them, you might have to go by horseback. They have to fly in by plane. Well, those Democrats tend to caucus with the Republicans, but not all the Republicans. So currently, in their Senate, again, this is prior to the elections, there are 9 Democrats who caucus with 8 Republicans, forming the majority. But there are 3 other Republicans that don't caucus. So it's 17 working together against 3. It's so bizarre. And on the House, there are 20 Republicans who caucus with an independent and 2 Democrats, and they're viewed as being the majority caucus. And then there's a minority caucus which is made up of 11 Democrats, one Republican, and
four
independents. That's what it was. I was missing more. Like four caucuses. Who was the four? So there's 11 Democrats, one Republican, and four independents. They're the minority, but there's also one Republican who's non-caucusing. So at some point, I'm going to have to see if they have their meetings televised, because I am just fascinated by this.
It's so different than the way it's done anywhere else in the country.
It's interesting how Alaska's legislature is like, it's very different. It's very different compared to other state legislatures.
It's unique, as far as I know.
What do you know about Project 2025?
Oh, that was just a policy, a product that was developed by a think tank. It's no different than any of the liberal think tanks that are out there and suggesting policy initiatives.
Mm-hmm. So is it going to go like in motion or something? Or
no.
That's what I've heard.
No, Trump has his own policies.
How's that for an answer?
All
right, Massachusetts. So we have approximately 4.8 million registered voters. 33% identify as Democrats, 12.3% registered as Republicans, 2.7% are registered as being third party, and 52% of people are unenrolled. So there are more people unenrolled than actually enrolled in parties in Massachusetts, which is interesting. And voter turnout was not as high as I would expect. So we got 4.8 million registered voters, but only 3.2 million people, give or take, actually voted. Half of them voted either by mail or early. Half of them did it in person. And in terms of the national election, Harris got 61.3% of the vote to Trump's 36.5%. And there were three third-party candidates on the ballot. Jill Stein, who was on the Green Party, Shiva Ayadori, who was an independent, and Chase Oliver, who was a libertarian, but combined Massachusetts voters rejected them. They only got 1.8% combined. No, none of them were over 1%. As far as our congressional elections, there were four of the nine Congress seats were contested, but the Democrats won all nine easily. The closest, if you could call it a race, was Bill Keating, who's down on the Cape. He managed to defeat Dan Sullivan 56 to 43%. At the Senate level, wasn't even close. Warren easily defeated Deaton 59.6 to 40.4%. That was actually much closer than I anticipated it. I didn't really see Deaton getting much higher than 35%. As far as the legislative races, we know there's 200 members that make up our general court. Of those 200 seats, 54 were contested in the House and 14 were contested in the Senate. In the House side, as far as the contested races go, the Republicans only won three. John Gaske won second Plymouth. That was technically an open seat because the previous occupant Republican Representative Susan Williams Gifford had died of cancer.
I heard about that.
Yep, so that was an open seat. Gaske beat a Democrat write-in candidate by the name of Sarah Hewins. Justin Thurber, that was the big, out of the three wins, that was the big one. Justin Thurber won the seat for the 5th Bristol District. He defeated Democrat Representative Patricia Haddad, who had been in her seat since 2001. She was very powerful. She was the Assistant Vice Chair of Ways and Means. And as we talked about when we were doing the legislative committees, Ways and Means is the most powerful committee in our state legislature. Yes?
Yeah, quick question, though. So which part of the Bristol, is it like from Taunton or New Bedford or Fall River?
I don't know what towns are in that district. The other Republican win was Kenneth Sweezy. He won the 6th Plymouth. That also was an open seat because the previous holder, a guy by the name of Josh Coulter, actually left the office in February. So that seat has been open since February. Surprised they didn't have a special election. Coulter resigned. He's working as the Undersecretary of Apprenticeship, Work-Based Learning, and Policy for Governor Healey. But Sweezy won. He defeated Rebecca Colina. I don't know what position she held before that. So how is that going to change? Well, prior to the election, the Democrats had 132 seats, there were 25 Republicans, and there were 3 vacancies. Well, now there's 132 Democrats, and there's 28 Republicans. Nothing's going to change. On the Senate side, like I said, out of the 40 Senate seats, 14 were contested, but the Democrats won 13 of 14. Only the Republican candidate, Kelly Dooner, she won the 3rd Bristol and Plymouth Senate district. She defeated selectmen from Raynham, a guy by the name of Joe Pacheco. That seat was open, as it was uncontested, because the previous holder, Mark Pacheco, no relation to Joe Pacheco, he served 30 years as a state senator, and he decided to retire. Now, that is a name that some of you should have heard of if you were kind of paying attention. Mark Pacheco, to say that he was a powerful member of the Democrat majority in the Senate, is an understatement. This is what committees he was on. He was the chairman of the Senate Post Audit and Oversight Committee. He was the chairman of the Joint Committee of Energy Preparedness and Management. He's the vice chair of the Joint Committee on Telecommunications, Utilities, and Energy. He also was a member of the Global Warming and Climate Change Committee and the State Administration and Regulatory Oversight Committee. Hugely powerful, hugely influential. So much so, he is the only member of the General Court ever in its history to have a law named after him. It's called the Pacheco Law. As a member of municipal government, the Pacheco Law is the most frustrating thing imaginable, because it requires the government to oversee any work that's sent out to a private company that could potentially be handled by state employees. So think construction. So if there's going to be a project and a private company's going to bid, they have to prove to the state that they're not only qualified to do it, but that they are going to follow state rules in terms of salaries, wages, and pricing. The reason why Massachusetts is the 3rd most expensive state in the country, for example, road repair, it's because of the Pacheco Law. The state tells the companies what they have to pay their employees. It's not determined by market rate. It's called prevailing wage. The same is true when companies build municipal buildings or state buildings. So I had people in my town complain that Sutton spent $60 million when we renovated our middle school. No, we renovated our high school and built a new middle school. I had voters complain that we spent $11 million building a police station. And my response is, it's the Pacheco Law, man. It's prevailing wage. The state makes things more expensive. There's also the other races that I wrote down. Governor's Council, because we talked about that. Of the 8 seats, 4 were contested, but the Democrats easily won all of them. The 1st District, the incumbent, Joseph Ferreira, he defeated an independent candidate by the name of Kristen Condon. The 2nd District seat was open, the previous occupant had retired, but the Democrat, Tamisha Civil, won. She beat a Republican by the name of Francis Crimmins. The 5th District also had an open seat, but the Democrat, Eunice Zegler, defeated Republican Ann Manning Martin, and an independent candidate by the name of Jody Elliott. And the one that's around here, the 7th District, Paul DiPaolo, defeated Republican Andrew Kuchar. So we had this big election, and nothing changed in Massachusetts. Ballot questions, though, were interesting. The audit passed. That was the biggest win. That was 71.5% of voters felt they need to audit the state legislature. The MCAS requirement for graduation was repealed. 59% people voted for that. The right for Uber drivers to unionize, that also passed. That was a close one. That was 53.8%.
So they have the right to unionize now?
They have a right to unionize.
That makes it going to be more expensive for us?
Way much so.
Yeah, it makes Ubers more expensive.
Because if you listen to the ads that the unions were pushing, they want Uber drivers now to get paid when basically they're not working. And they're also going to get gas. So that's all going to get built into the prices. So I would expect Uber rates might not double, but will definitely go up more than 50%.
Wow.
But you get what you vote for. The use of mushrooms, psychedelics, medicinal psychedelics, that did not pass. That was defeated. 57% of the people voted against it. And wages for tip earners, that also was defeated. 64.3%.
That's good news.
So, as far as post-election analysis, Massachusetts is Massachusetts, what can I say?
Yep.
The only thing that sucks about that is the Uber thing, but I don't take Uber, so.
Well,
I do take Uber, so.
The funny thing is that when Uber was created, it was not meant to be a full-time job. It was always billed that someone could get a side hustle, do it on the part-time. And people would get paid when they were actually driving people.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But now they want an hourly wage, and they want, you know, to get gas paid for. So whenever the government passes new laws that involves giving people more money, that service gets more expensive.
I think gas makes sense, but like doing nothing?
No, that's bullshit. You can deduct, you can actually, on your taxes, you can put in for gas mileage.
So we get, because that's what I do. I go around and I do mortgage refinancing. I drive 23,000 miles or so a year just for that, give or take. And I claim it on my taxes. I get 68 cents a mile. I actually get more money back on my taxes than I actually pay for gas. So,
that was kind of BS. So now if they're going to get paid for gas, they're going to lose the ability to do the tax credit for the mileage. So they kind of shot themselves in the foot.
Quick question. I know not to get off topic, Bill, but did Fatman win his re-election?
He did.
Oh, he did. Okay, good. Because I know someone was going against him, though.
Yeah, he was Antonello, I think his name was.
I think his name's, I forgot what.
I don't think Ryan lost a single town.
Did he even win Upton, though, to my town?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, good.
I don't know. I haven't crossed paths with him yet, but I will, if you want, I'll reach out and I'll see what he got.
Okay, I'm just wondering, though, because my dad really likes him.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's a good guy. Very approachable.
Very friendly.
He follows me on Instagram, though.
Yeah, well, but the thing about Ryan is that if you send him questions, he will follow up. He'll get back to you.
Okay.
So, definitely, I'm glad to see that he won. Yep.
Why do you think people voted for the Uber thing?
Because of massive disinformation. There was only ads for one side of the issue. And
most voters just vote based on emotion without doing research.
They're like, oh yeah, they deserve to get paid.
Right, they deserve to get paid, but they don't understand how people actually get paid.
Yeah.
You know what I would love to see? I would love to see a basic literacy test be put in place before you can vote. Mm-hmm. Nothing big. Like the citizenship test.
Exactly. Yeah, let's just have some functional literacy, but we don't have that. So you could basically know nothing and just go in and fill any circle that you want, and your vote counts equal to me, who I was in and out of my ballot in like 30 seconds because I had already researched. I knew who I was voting for, who I was leaving blank, and I knew how I was answering all the questions. Boom, 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 boom.
Polls opened at 7. The picture that I took of the Scantron machine said 7:02.
Did they interview you for camping outside?
No! No one ever came. Although the clerk gave me a hard time.
She's like, what, you didn't bring coffee? And I said, no, you didn't bring me coffee?
So we're just like out there, just like, you know, like maybe on like Best Buy on Black Friday, just like has your face pressed against the window. It's
like really No. I did bring a chair, but the school was already open because the janitors got there early. So I went inside and I waited inside.
Are you the first person there?
No, there was other, the pole staff was there setting everything up.
Oh, okay, sorry.
But I was standing outside the gym and I was talking too long because they all knew me, so.
Yeah, but it's a quick question though. I don't mean to offend you though, but did anybody like notice so much you were wearing though, like when you were like when you went inside the polls to go vote though? But I'm just curious. I know this is kind of personal though, but
no, because it was not candidate specific.
Oh, so it's not like representing like any candidate though.
So
you can't do that, can you?
No, you cannot wear something that's candidate specific.
No, you can't.
So 2016? No, it was 2020. I went in to vote. And I totally forgot that I had a Trump hat on. It just slipped my... I'd been wearing the hat all day. It was just a hat on my head. I wear hats every single day of my life. But there's never a point in the day when I go, what hat am I wearing?
Guess what?
So I wore it in, and the lieutenant... like got really nasty because she didn't realize it was me. Because I just kind of like I usually walk like this, and just kind of just sitting there. And she's like, "Oh, you can't wear that!" And then like I kind of put my hat up, and she's like, "Oh," and I'm like, "Sorry, I didn't realize." And I just kind of did one of these.
Guess what? Guess what, Professor? They did the same thing to me when I voted in the. This was 2 years ago. Like when I voted in the. Midterm primaries, though, when I voted in the midterm primaries, though, they did the same thing to me, though, because I was wearing, you know, because they did the same thing to me. They said, no.
So the reason why is that most towns have policies that prohibit partisanship on town property. Mm-hmm. So think of that guy up in Hanover. That's doing the projection, or was doing the projection on the water tank.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, so the town was kind of freaking out, and they were going to fine him because that's a display of partisan message on town property. And it's really up to the individual towns on how rigid they're going to be in terms of enforcement. So in our town, for the people who are standing outside the polls, they have their free speech zones. That the clerk basically tells them where they can stand, but they can stand there holding the signs, but they can't put the signs in the ground. Because the moment you put the sign in the ground, you have basically implanted it on town property, and that's deemed as a violation. But our clerk does not fine people. She gives them a stern warning, and I've never heard of an incident where no one has, or anyone has said, "Now!" Heck, when I'm out there, when I'm doing my triannual campaigning, I always have my sign, and if I get tired of holding it, I'll put it down, but I'll put my pole on my foot. So I'll sit there like this, resting on it, but it's not in the ground.
What I thought was crazy was how little you have to do. You just have to give your name and your birth year, but somebody can easily...
I know, isn't that disgusting?
It really is.
There was an effort to put an ID requirement for voting about 10 years ago, and it got defeated, and it was blanketly labeled as being racist.
But how?
It's the soft bigotry of low expectations.
Yeah.
It's the belief that somehow minority people can't figure out how to get an ID if they want to vote.
But
not that they don't have IDs anyways, because to have an ID, you have to do everything.
Yeah, but in California, they banned it in California.
I know, that's just disgusting.
I know.
My friend is currently in Florida, or he's going to school in Florida, and like he asked me to vote for him, and I was like, I couldn't, but he found someone to vote for him.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? I also know parents, although I didn't hear about it this time around, 2020, I know parents who did the mail-in voting, their kids are in school, and they filled out the ballots for the kids. That's legal. But Massachusetts also, during the COVID craziness, Massachusetts also changed its election laws that prevents clerks from rejecting votes
based on non-conforming signatures. Previously, if you did an absentee ballot, the clerk had to verify the signature that was on the ballot. Well, prior to the 2020 election, Massachusetts got rid of that. So there's really nothing the clerks can do.
So for your guys' towns, you had to just say your name and your birthday?
Birthday. It's name and address.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I got confused.
But no one, at least for the foreseeable future, is ever going to be able to vote in my place. Because all the poll people know why. It's the advantage of being a selector for 4 terms. But you're right. It's crazy. It's really crazy.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
But it is what it is. I think it's 22 states.
That don't require
Florida. No, that do require.
Oh, so I know Florida and Texas definitely require them.
Yeah, I know. It's mostly the Republican states that do it. And it's most of the Democrats that don't.
Yeah. I know. I think it's kind of ridiculous, though, because...
That could be... Well, there you go. You want to get involved? It's not a ballot question.
Yeah.
It's not a ballot question. Change the law.
Yeah, in my opinion, I think it's ridiculous, though. Like, why some states don't require photo IDs.
I don't know. It's partisan. And I'm only saying that because it's always the Republicans that are for it, and it's always the Democrats that are against it. And it's
exactly.
But that's the nature of the times in which we live, my friends. Mm-hmm. Gone are the days when you could have Democrats and Republicans working together all the time. In U.S. history, too, I love talking about the presidential elections that occurred post-Reconstruction. So the 1870s, 1880s, 1890s. Because you could not, policy-wise, really tell the difference between Democrats and Republicans. Because what they do is they used to represent their states or the part of the country they came from. So all of the Democrats and Republicans in New England used to work together. All of the Southern Democrats and Republicans used to work together because it was focused on regionalism. And as a result of that, there was a lot more compromise. But for the last, it really started being really just disgusting, late 80s, early 90s. And, just go through the newspapers, go through a history book, and you can see, like, when the Republicans went after Bill Clinton, impeached him. It was all partisanship. It was all just driven. The Republicans wanted to get the Democrat. And it was garbage. Did he lie about having sex with Monica Lewinsky? Yes. But that's not a high crime and misdemeanor. You know, that should have been something that was handled in the elections. The people should have said, we don't want this guy.
Was this around when Newt Gingrich was Speaker, though?
Yes.
I know he was Speaker of the House in the 90s, though.
Yes, he was. He was. But again, that was partisanship. Just like when they impeached Trump both times. It was the Democrats trying to get him. It's not good. We just need to stop with the Democrats and the Republicans and focus on, like I do, at the town level. Because as I may have told you, and it's the truth, imagine if your snowplow driver, your highway department guy, was partisan. And the snow falls, and he's going to go and plow. What, is he only going to plow the streets in front of the Democrat houses? You can't, as a community, function like that. You got to set the party bullshit aside and focus on, you know, what we all have in common. The common good, which I talked about when I was talking about our Constitution.
Where are you laying, Professor?
I get why they exist, but the problem is that people, more and more people identify.
Yeah.
It's like an identifying qualification. Oh, I'm a Democrat. It's like they identify as being male, Democrat. Just be a human being, for God's sakes. Because when food prices go up, when gas prices go up, when electric bills go up, you know, it doesn't just impact one person or some people. It impacts everybody. And I'm hopeful. I am hopeful. Pray to God that the next 4 years are not as vitriolic as they were when he was in office the last time around.
Hopefully.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, Trump is actually a Democrat. But he's an FDR Democrat. He's a John Fitzgerald Kennedy Democrat, a Truman Democrat. He's not a left-wing progressive Democrat. So that's one of the reasons why he won this time around, because what was his message?
His message was identical to the platform that John F. Kennedy ran on.
Yeah, exactly, because you know his, like John F. Kennedy's nephew,
Robert F. Kennedy
Jr., you know, he endorsed him, though,
Yeah, and who voted for Trump? Everybody. Every single category went up. He won more women, he got more Latinos, he got more African Americans, he got more Asians, he got more Jews, he got more Muslims.
Yeah.
Every category he won.
Yeah, because like, for example, like in Texas though, like in Texas though, I saw some counties in the Rio Grande Valley flipped though.
There were some counties that had never voted for Republican ever.
Yeah.
And had flipped.
Yeah, like just like with Miami-Dade County though too. It's the same thing though in Florida.
Here's the thing. And this is then I'm done with the election. Because
okay.
We got stuff we got to do.
Okay.
At the end of the day, if the focus is on us,
mm-hmm.
the people, and what's good for the common good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the common good doesn't apply to everybody. It's not equity.
Mm-hmm.
It's common good. I mean, it's good for most.
Mm-hmm.
That should be the focus of any administration's policies.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
For the last, the current occupant in that administration, they have not focused on the common good. They've only focused on little categories. And I think that's the reason why the electorate in our country rejected that. Because they didn't want four more years of that. They didn't want plumbers and contractors paying off the college tuition of people who are going to become doctors and lawyers and government employees. You know, they're just not right. So if this administration, and again, most of the people that were is going to be on his team are Democrats. Tulsi Gabbard, Bobby Kennedy, Elon Musk. If they focus on us, then we're going to have a time in our country unlike anything that has ever happened before.
Mm-hmm.
But if he gets nasty and he focuses on partisanship and he doesn't listen to the other side, then we're just going to get four more years of the same. So for me, and again, it's going to sound weird, I don't care, D or R. I worry about us. And if we got somebody that's a D that's going to be good for us, I'll support them. If it's going to be someone who's an R that's going to be good for us, I'll support them too. Because at the end of the day, it always starts and ends with we and we.
Exactly.
So you're saying Donald Trump is similar to like JFK's kind of like Democratic views, I guess.
Yeah, the way the party used to be.
How come JFK was very universally loved back then?
Because he had good people working in his promotions. He created an image. So Camelot, you know, that was all false. They didn't really talk about Kennedy as a person because he really was a dirtbag. Slept around, did drugs, was a neglectful husband. But, you know, they don't... The press back then used to protect whoever was in office, Democrats and Republicans, because they didn't want social media gossip being talked about. And again, that's one of the reasons why throughout most of our history, prior to the late 1980s, early 90s, it was always about America, what's good for the nation. And then it started descending into Dems versus Republicans, and it just got really bad. And it's worse now than I've ever seen it in my life. Keep in mind, I've been on this earth since Nixon started. Nixon was in office. So, Nixon, Ford, Carter, Reagan, Bush the Elder, Clinton, Bush the Junior, W, Barack Obama, Trump, our current occupant, and our next occupant. It's a lot of presidencies. And, it's just, the partisanship's just got to stop. But we'll see. So who knows, maybe 4 years from now, I'll be in this class, and I'll be saying, my God, I trusted Trump, and he betrayed me. You never know. But we can hope for the best. Because if the president fails, we fail. All right. So the court system. Got to talk about law.
Sorry. We took, but we had a pretty long conversation.
I came in stacked for it. It's all right.
Okay, it's fine. No big deal.
All right, so we were talking about the judiciary, what goes on. We talked about the five criteria in order to sue somebody. You got to have standing. There has to be justiciability. The issue has to be right. Can't be moot. And we left off with proper venue. In order to have your case heard, you must file in the right court.
But it's not that easy, because we actually have two separate tiered systems
in our court systems. We have two. We have a federal court system, and we have state court systems. Why do we have two?
Checks and balances.
Both levels of government have the ability to make laws, and if both can make laws, there are cases to be heard under each.
Very good. Very good. We'll do the state court system first, and then we'll give you... Actually, no, I don't think I do federal in here, but it's basically the same thing. All right. Wait, what am I doing? Where am I going? My notes are really off. Sewer B. Sutton, Massachusetts. Oh, two-tiered system, federal and court. And there's no federal in court. That should have come up. All right. Now, I'm not going to talk about the federal court. But very simple. The federal court, they have trial courts down on the bottom. And then there's an appeals court that are called the circuit courts. And then on the tip of the top is the Supreme Court of the United States. There is the federal court system. State courts generally have a similar structure. But here's the thing. Every single state court system is different. No two are alike. But, generally speaking, in every single one, you still see the same basic structure, meaning it's like a pyramid, and down on the bottom are the trial courts. And these function literally as I'm describing them. These are where you go and have your trial. Judge, jury, evidence, blah. Now, some states have two tiers in their trial court system. There's an upper and there's a lower. Some states have three tiers. But it's all based on jurisdiction. Subject matter. Jurisdiction. Meaning, the state legislature creates a court and gives it a certain area that it controls. So, there are some states that have just criminal courts. Obviously, they have jurisdiction over all crimes. But there are also civil courts. So in those courts, they deal with all civil cases. So disputes between parties looking for money. There are also, in most systems, some type of specialty courts. Bless you. So like a traffic court, or a small claims court, or a probate court or a land court. But no two are identical. But the key is, this is where the parties go in. They engage in that competition to the death. And there's a winner and there's a loser. Actually, that would be really entertaining. If we could put a little like gladiatorial game in the court system. So if you're going to go to court and you lose, you get fed to the lions or something like that.
Why do we still do that?
Because that really would not give everybody a chance to have justice.
That's fair.
Because imagine if the jury just didn't like the way you look because you had green hair and they ruled against you. That wouldn't be right.
Good thing I have blue hair.
It's green.
Is it greenish?
It's like teal.
So I'm safe, Professor.
All right. So there's an outcome. If it's a criminal case, someone's either guilty or they're acquitted. If it's a civil case, they're liable or not. Sitting above them is the appeals court, the appellate court.
Now again, just like everywhere else in the country, each state is different. Some states have two tiers within the appellate level. Some have one. In each one, the jurisdiction is controlled by the legislature. They pass laws. So in New York, for example, they have an upper appellate court that deals with all of the big crimes, murder, rape, arson, as well as all of the big civil disputes, typically that involve corporations suing one another for millions of dollars. But there's also a lesser appeals court that deals with appeals from the more minute cases. But an appeals, all the appeals are the same. It's not a retrial. You don't have a jury. You don't represent evidence. But rather, what gets adjudicated is a claim that during the trial, an error was made. What type of error? It could be a procedural error. Maybe the judge let hearsay evidence in. It could be an error in the law. So maybe the judge didn't instruct the jury properly. But you don't get an appeal because you lost in the trial. If you lose, that's justice, if you were meant to lose. But if you lost because of some type of procedural or legal error, then you might have grounds for an appeal. So, hypothetical, you lose your case because you have teal hair. Well, there's nothing in the law that allows the jury to make a decision based on your hair color. That's discriminatory. So that would might give you a chance to get an appeal. Now, what do the appeals, and it's a panel, you go before at least three judges, they only hear the error. So they don't rehash the evidence, you don't bring the witnesses in. So he would have to make a ground based on constitutionality, you know, that his civil rights, his right to freely express himself, were completely ignored, and he was, you know, found guilty because of that bias. And what the court would do is reverse the decision. Because that's what appeals courts do. They either reverse or they affirm, uphold the decision of the trial. Well, what happens if the appeals court gets it wrong? Well, then you have the state's highest court, like a Supreme Court. But not all states call their high court the Supreme Court. In Massachusetts, it's called the Supreme Judicial Court. But just to confuse the bejeebus out of you, in New York, their Supreme Court is actually called the New York Court of Appeals. The Supreme Court in New York is their upper trial court. So that's why I'm trying not to use names, because every single state is different. But they're all basically structured the same. You have trial courts, you have appeals courts, and then you have a top court. How do you get to the top court? You essentially appeal. You claim that there was an error, and the top court can either overturn it, or affirming.
Yes, Susan.
So can you say, like, maybe you're writing an essay or something, can you put top quotes there?
You could say that, or you could Supreme Court, or Superior, no, actually don't use Superior Court. Don't use Superior Court. Yeah, maybe State Supreme Court, call it that way. That would be the cleanest way to do it. Because the 99% of the people, when they're going to read that, they'll understand exactly what you're saying. Me, I'm going to sit back and think, is Susan talking about New York? Because I'm a nerd.
No way.
Do you have a question?
Oh, no.
Oh, I'm sorry, Anna. All right, any other questions on this?
Quick question, though. So the Supreme Court's not called the Massachusetts Supreme Court, though?
No, it's called the Supreme Judicial Court.
Yeah, just like other states.
Actually, technically, it's the Supreme Judicial Court of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Oh, okay. I see.
So when we get to Massachusetts, we're going to call it the SJC, as opposed to the SCOTUS, which is the Supreme Court of the United States. All right. Here is something that might be interesting to you. In our country, the vast majority of state judges do not have life tenure. Meaning, they're not put on there for the rest of their life. But rather, they're either elected or they're appointed, or some combination of both, for a certain period of years. So they actually have terms. All right, here's the breakdown. 23 states, their judges are appointed based on merit. Meaning, to get the job, you have to prove that you're qualified to do the job. But there are 4 other states that do appointment when there is no qualification. So that's the old, you live in the state and you have a pulse and you could become a judge. Massachusetts, you have to be a member of the Massachusetts State Bar. And you actually get interviewed. You actually have to prove that you have the legal acumen to be a judge. That's merit. All right. 15 states, they actually have nonpartisan elections. So the judges have to run for their job, but they don't do it on a partisan basis. It's not D versus R. It's like a local election. So the person's name's on the ballot, but they don't identify as being in a party. Yes?
So Massachusetts doesn't do it, though, but I do think that there is one state that I know of that does do it, and I'm pretty sure Texas does it, though, I think. They're having elections for Supreme Court officials, though.
Probably. I'm not sure.
I think it's, from what I remember, I think it's Texas, though, if I'm not mistaken.
I just don't know. I did not write down the standards for all 50 states in here.
Okay.
But that's what the Google machine's for. Okay. But I think you're right. Texas is the kind of state that they probably have elections. But here's the thing. So there's 15 states that have nonpartisan election, but there are 8 states that have partisan elections. So 8 states, you vote for judges based on whether they're D or R. But again, I just didn't write down which they were. All right. As far as terms go, 47 states have terms for their judges. And they range from 6 years to 10 years. I don't know of any states that have term limits, though. If there were states that have term limits, I probably would have put it in my notes, but it's not there. So, knowing me back when I made this class 20 years ago, being the nerd, I would have put that in. But since I made this section, it could have changed. But we'll just say, for the sake of argument, 47, they serve terms with no term limits. So they could get reappointed for another term, or they could run for re-election. There are three states, however, that let the judges remain in office for what's known as good behavior. So once they're on there, they stay. And it's kind of amazing, but all three are from New England: Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. Once the judges are appointed, they can stay.
Oh, I just saw that right here.
The only exception of those three is Massachusetts. You are age limited in Massachusetts. You have to retire on the day before you turn 70. And that was the result of a constitutional amendment. Questions on any of those stats?
Could they be as young as they, or so they have to be a certain age to become a judge?
No. You probably have to be 18.
Oh,
right. But good luck getting into law school at the age of 18. So
yeah.
You're probably going to have to do your 4 years. That's going to put you 21, 22. Then you got to do at least another 3 years of law school. So that makes you like 24, 25. And then you have to get experience to show you know how to do judge work. So you're probably going to work at least a law firm or work within the court system. Probably going to put in about 10 years, I'd have to guess. So maybe 30s.
Okay.
But most of the judges that I'm aware of, they're usually in their 50s by the time they get on to Massachusetts. But they can stay till 69 years and 364 days. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Susan. Type of cases that the courts can hear. So, I'm going to get ahead of myself because we'll talk about it next class. In Massachusetts, we have a two-tiered system in our trial courts. You have the Superior Court, where you would go if the case involves incarceration of 5 or more years, or if you're suing civilly, I think it's up to $50,000. They changed it. Used to be 20. I think it's 50 now. So if you have a case you're suing me for $700,000, you would file your claim in the Superior Court. But if it's a lesser case, suing me for $5,000, you would do it in the District Court. Actually, $5,000. No, $5,000, that's in small claims. Small claims is $7,000 or less. So we'll say $10,000.
Okay.
So that would be District.
Okay. So can I say that?
Yeah, the type of case. And what's at stake?
Okay. That's in terms of money
or punishment.
Punishment, okay.
So again, if you get convicted of committing a homicide in Massachusetts, murder, you're probably going to get incarcerated more than 5 years. Doesn't mean the jury's going to find you guilty. You could be acquitted. But what the potential outcome is more than 5, so you would go to the upper court.
Oh.
If it was just a misdemeanor, you would go to the lower court.
So who determines all these things?
You, when you file your claim. And like I said, that's one of the 5 criteria. You gotta make sure you file in the right court. Because if you sue me for negligence and you try doing it in the probate court, you're not gonna have a case. The clerk will take your money though. Good question. Any other questions? All right. Jurisdiction. We'll give you a broad overview. What type of cases end up in the federal courts? Well, the biggest types of cases is, as Susan said earlier, it's called the federal question. Anything that pertains to federal law, or the U.S. Constitution, or a federal regulation, or a treaty. Those are federal questions. You would have your case heard in federal court. If you try filing a claim under a federal statute in Massachusetts courts, they will take your money, and then you will get a letter in the mail about 30 days later saying, dumbass, you're in the wrong venue. Well, they won't say dumbass, but you know what I mean.
So could you get that money back?
No. No. So here's the little dirty rub. That's the reason why you always should go to a lawyer if you're going to sue somebody. Because the lawyer is going to know which venue to file in. And if they do it wrong and say the statute of limitations run, then you file a claim against your lawyer.
And then it could just be a chain reaction.
That person could end up being disbarred.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. No, I passed the bar.
Oh, sorry. I thought that's why you're a professor now.
No, because I was a professor before I went to law. I went to law. I told you this story. I went to law school for shits and giggles. I was bored. I'm like, do I want to go get... I have a bachelor's degree and I have two master's degrees. And I have about 20 other graduate level credits, classes that I took. Never went and got a PhD, though. Just because I thought it was dumb. Why do I want to go get another degree and I'm going to have to sit there and listen to a professor talk about stuff that I already was teaching? So I was sitting there and I'm like, well, I really want to push myself because I'm a nerd. So let's just go to law school. And so I enrolled and I went to law school on a whim. Didn't really study, but I did really well because I'm a nerd and I know stuff. And like I told you, I wasn't going to sit for the bar, but all my classmates said, you're dumb. You just passed graduate law school. You're not going to go sit for the bar. And I said, fine. I didn't study for it. Pass it on the first attempt. Well, I was working. I didn't have time to study.
No, yeah. But the fact that you passed without studying
was pretty impressive. Yeah, considering one of the kids I graduated with, it took him 9 times. He sat for the bar 9 times. I don't know what the bar exam is now, but back when I took it, it was like $1,500 a test.
You, bro.
Yeah, and you take it over 2 days.
How much was law school?
I went cheap. I went to Massachusetts School of Law up in Andover.
Okay.
Yeah, I went there just because I was just going on a whim. I got into Suffolk, but I wasn't going to pay the $30,000, whatever it is, a semester, because I was not planning on being a lawyer.
Did you ever plan on going to Harvard Law School?
No. No, I don't like the type of people that go to Harvard Law School.
Yeah.
I find them to be full of themselves. And I'm not like that. I'm not that kind of guy.
Yeah.
All right. Federal question. We got that down. All right. The other area of subject matter jurisdiction that you would file a claim in federal courts is diversity of citizenship. Any clue what that means? And I can guarantee you that your clue is probably going to be wrong, but we'll let you try.
Very encouraging.
Does it mean you have citizenships in different countries?
No.
Oh, okay.
Wrong. Other guests.
Can I search it out?
No, don't cheat. Anyone else?
No. Is it when you are from maybe a different state?
What do you mean different state?
Like maybe I'm in Massachusetts, somebody's in Ohio.
You really are smart. Well done.
Oh, I got it right?
You're the first student ever that got it right out of the gates. Well done.
So it's just like being...
I was guessing.
Remember, we do not live in a unified country. We're not England. We're not France. We have a federal constitutional republic that's made up of 50 independent and sovereign states. The states are like countries. And when our country was founded, after we broke away from the motherland and the Articles of Confederation didn't work, the people who drafted the Constitution had to deal with the fact that each of the states, they had their own armies, they had their own foreign policy, they had their own economies.
So, one of the states' rights matters that was retained when the Union was formed was control over citizenry. Prior to the creation or ratification of the 14th Amendment, which was not put in place until 1868, I think, 67, 68, when the 14th Amendment was ratified, all residency, citizenship matters were controlled by the states. So, you could try immigrating over here from somewhere, and Massachusetts could kick you out. And then you would have to pay to go home. And every single state had their own citizenship requirements. So, what happens if essentially you are a citizen of a country, Massachusetts or Rhode Island, Connecticut, and you get into a law case with somebody who lives in another country? Well, what are you going to do? Are you going to file your case in Massachusetts against somebody you get in a dispute with in Rhode Island? Well, the Rhode Island courts can't force that person to come to Massachusetts, and Massachusetts can't go and get them. So, when the framers made our Constitution, they sat back and said, there's got to be a place where people who have those type of claims can go. And so, in Article 3 of our Constitution, they created diversity of citizenship. So, if you're going to sue somebody civilly who lives in another state, the proper venue is going to be federal courts. Well, it's in Article 3 of the U.S. Constitution. Why? Well, there is a federal court in every single state in the country. So, if you want to sue someone for Rhode Island, you can go down in Rhode Island and sue them down there if you want, or you can sue them in Massachusetts. Because guess what? The United States Federal Court in Massachusetts can do that person who lives in Rhode Island. Pull them in.
But here's the catch.
Today, if you're going to file a diversity suit, you have to sue someone for more than
$75,000.
$75,000.
Why?
Because they don't want smaller matters to bog up court time.
Questions of either of these? Yes.
So
you earned all the questions you want. I am so proud of you. That was awesome.
No, I'm just kidding. So if I have a case below $75,000,
yes,
where do I go?
You're going to have to go with state courts.
And the person is in another state.
Yeah, and I'll explain it when we get there, but it's really complicated.
Uh-oh.
Yes?
Could you give us a simple definition of diversity of citizenship?
Susan already did.
Well, I know. Okay.
When you're going to sue somebody in another state.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah, like for example, like you go
for more than $75,000.
Say you want to sue somebody from, I don't know, let's say Indiana, though, and you got to maybe go to the court. Like you'll say from Massachusetts, then you got to go to Indiana, though.
It's the teal. It's creeping into the soul.
So what happened?
I'm sorry. I just wanted to know.
So if they're in another state, they still have to show up to that court.
They can summons them, yes.
So that means like what they get? They enter into a contract with like a bounty hunter or something?
Yes.
And then the outcome.
Yeah. That's what Dog the Bounty Hunter did.
Yeah.
Or retired.
How do you feel about bounty hunters?
I love them.
Really? You think so?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If I could come back. If I could come back and do it again, yeah, I'd pursue that.
Yeah.
Dude, I didn't know there were still bounty hunters until like a month ago. It blew my mind.
They only have to take like a 72-hour course.
Yeah, it's not
it's
that
not,
hard.
It's really not that hard.
Yeah, it's not that hard. Alright,
so state courts. They have subject matter jurisdiction over those common law issues that I talked about last class. Meaning, things that have been developed over the 1,000 years of English common law. So what's a common law matter? Homicide, rape,
arson, negligence. You know, those are all common law matters. So, you are not going to sue someone in federal court for murder. That would take place in a state court. So, classic example. Dzhokhar Dzhinayev. Anyone know who that is?
Boston Marathon
bomb. Him and his brother did those pressure cooker bombs, killed four people during the Boston Marathon. This ended up 12 years. Yeah, we're getting time's going by 12 years, maybe even longer.
Yeah, I remember.
Maybe actually, no, maybe not that far.
It didn't happen in 2013, the bombing in the Boston Marathon.
Yeah, I think you're
I remember it happened in 2013, I believe.
So anyways, so he and his brother committed homicide, murder. But he also violated federal law. He committed acts of terrorism. So Dzhokhar Dzhinayev was never tried in Massachusetts for murder because Massachusetts allowed only the federal court system to handle the terrorism statute. Because the federal government has something that we don't allow in Massachusetts. The death penalty. But Massachusetts could have tried him for murder as well. All right. So, types of cases. Ooh, that's all screwed up, so go back. Actually, what I just talked about was concurrent. All right, anyways. Types of cases. Very simple. Anything involving a state constitution. Anything involving a state law. Anything involving contracts or probate, so estate matters, consumer protection, those estate matters, corporations, anything dealing with elections, those are all contracts. They're all handled at the state court level. So, you were contracting with someone to buy a house, and they screwed you over, and you end up buying a clunker of a house. Well, you wouldn't go to federal court to sue them. You would go to the state court. That would have subject matter jurisdiction. Now, there are issues that overlap. And this is what I talked about with the marathon bomber. That is one incident, one act, that had concurrent issues. At the same time. Concurrent means at the same time. So, Dzhokhar was handled under the federal terrorist statute, even though he committed a common law act of murder. So, Massachusetts could have tried him. And I'm guessing if we had the death penalty. Now, here's the weird thing. The death penalty actually is on our books. But what the SJC has said is you can't apply it to any punishment or any crime, rather. You can't use it as a punishment for any crime.
What's it there for?
It's just on the books. Death penalty actually almost came back. There was a ballot question. I think it was 98? Maybe it was in 2000. That's, I don't remember when it was.
How severe was
it? It was one vote. One guy in the Senate decided he knew better than, even though his district had voted for it overwhelmingly. Because don't forget, if you're going to have a ballot question, it has to get approved by the legislature. So here's the interesting thing about these ballot questions. It doesn't mean they're all going to go on the books. The general court's going to have a say. In that instance, he went against his own district. He ended up losing his next time he went for re-election.
We were that close to bringing it back.
And what was allowed? We had the electric chair. We had hanging. I don't think we had lethal injection. And I think we had firing squad.
That'd be an epic way to go out.
Oh yeah, if you're gonna go out in a blaze of glory.
Yeah.
Trying to dodge as many
balls as you can. See, I don't know why they aim for the heart, though. Because I know, like, wouldn't it just be easier if they just went, like, one simple shot to the brain?
It's not as messy. And it's a harder target to hit.
The brain?
Yeah.
It's like a bowling ball in your head, bro.
No.
Because they're not that far away. They're not that far away, though, from the first, like, they stand in.
Yeah, you're going to be at least 50 yards. Yeah, you don't want the bullet to ricochet.
Oh, yeah.
You ever fire a gun? Go to a gun range? This is the reason why everything is down range. Because little chunks of metal do bounce. All right. The other type of case that you could go to state court for is if it's a diversity of citizenship, but it's less than 75,000. So how would this work? You would go to court, the out-of-state person would not show up, and you would win by what's known as a default judgment. So you only can win in court if you show up. If you choose not to, the other side wins automatically. So you would then take that default judgment from a Massachusetts court, and you would have to find a lawyer in Rhode Island who would then file the claim with the Rhode Island courts. And then the Rhode Island courts would go after them. So you would end up getting whatever it is you were trying to get, but it would take a long time. Could take a year or two before you would get paid. So it's possible, it's just harder. So one example, and then we will be done. I had a student who was renting an apartment, and he decided he hated his landlord. The landlord was a scumbag. So he wasn't going to pay. He picked up all of his stuff, moved out of the house, left the keys on the counter, and just walked away. His landlord filed a claim against him for failure to pay because this person signed a lease. By the way, most landlord-tenant agreements are at will, meaning you can end it whenever you want. But because he had a lease, he would be required to pay. One of the clauses said, if you try to leave early, you have to pay for the rest of the year. So he came to me, and he's like, yeah, I don't even live in this state. I'm not going to pay. It's stupid. I'm going back to Colorado. And guess what? I warned him. He will find you.
They will come for you.
3 years later, out of the blue, I got an email from him. You were right. I should have listened to you because the Colorado courts imposed like a 45% penalty on the judgment, and it cost him way more than it could have if he just paid it off. Or he actually just filled out the lease. So don't think bouncing will get you out of an obligation. They will find you.
So what was your legal practice? What were you like doing when you were a lawyer? Or what are you?
Christ, I am a lawyer.
No, I know you are. No, I know. I worded that a little bit.
Oh, I have my own practice. Am I going to fire myself?
So what do you focus on?
I was going to say, do you mean what he does?
What do I do?
I do boring stuff.
I do mortgage refinancing.
You have money then.
What?
You have money.
I have money? Yeah, I'm not going to complain. I make way more doing that than I do teaching this class, but I like teaching, because that's what I've always done.
You like us, Professor?
I do. This is a really good group. I was telling my wife about you guys.
Really?
I got a really good class. Aww. They're engaged, they're knowledgeable.
Professor, you're going to make me...
Some people are shy. Look at you. But still does well on exams. That's fine. All right, on that note, we'll see you all later.
All right.